Now, I think we have a topic here that'll get Madeline talking. We haven't finished Living at the Speed of Light, McLuhan's prediction for the 80s. Isn't that something you'd be interested in, Madeline? You like that article.
Yeah.
You're going to have to say you like it. You already did say you liked it. Okay, so let's finish. There's only a few paragraphs left. So going back a little bit, just to get into the swing, he's talking about the learning environment, Brent. Okay, what is learning? Now, in Understanding Media, he says learning a living. And if the Freemasons were of that ilk, they liked learning, then we have globalized the Freemasonic workshop. And that may be why McLuhan had 33 chapters in Understanding Media, which came out in 1964. And one of the chapters is called Learning a Living Under the Medium Automation. So here's what McLuhan says about learning. And he does talk about the artistic creative process is a replay of the ordinary learning experience, but it's been virtualized and made available to everybody on the planet. So the artistic program of learning for not making money purposes, learning for the sake of the pleasure of it, has become a global information environment. So, Brent, maybe you could mute yourself since your car vibration is coming in and you can still hear us. Okay?
Yeah, no problem.
All right. So McLuhan says, learning in the environment of electric information, so that's since the telegraph, when the French symbolists were inspired by Edgar Allan Poe, who kind of externalized the creative process, turned it into an objective replay called, McLuhan called, the stages of apprehension, where creation and learning are very intertwined. So learning in the environment of electric information confronts us paradoxically with the traditional ideal of a liberal education. So the humanities, the non-scientific part of university schooling, maybe even high school schooling, was called a liberal education. And it actually came out of the trivium, which was logic, grammar, and rhetoric, and music, astronomy, arithmetic, and geometry. So what is he saying here? Confronts us with the traditional ideal. So what is the ideal of a liberal education? So he says Cardinal Newman, a famous intellectual Catholic, Cardinal Newman saw it as training for leaders. So the liberal education was supposed to be for everybody, but now under lefty conditions it became mandatory for leaders. A program that dispensed with classes and credits, so it gave up on the competitive part of education. I remember Cardinal Newman said, anybody who's got a bunch of books is a university. Just have to have some books. Interesting books, probably. Cardinal Newman saw it as training for leaders, a program that dispensed with classes and credits and relied on what today is called the rap session, in which the conversation of all served as lectures for each. So this is what McLuhan told university professors. Stop having classes. Stop having exams. The information in our puny little university classes are nowhere near the information that people process every day in the global electric classroom. So why don't we create a different kind of excitement by allowing students to get insights and pattern recognition through bull sessions or rap sessions, where conversation, where everybody's conversing, and it serves as lectures for each. I guess it depends on whose bullshit you're listening to. Problem solving for leadership has to dispense with the expert. The expert are the people who go, we've tried it before, it doesn't work. So those people who know that we tried it before and it doesn't work, what if I had been an expert when I showed up? And I'm saying, oh, JW's channeling something. I've done many channels. It's okay, but not something I want to do again, so forget it. Yeah, I didn't do that. I didn't act like an expert. I said, oh, here we go again. What's this going to be? Might work. So problem solving for leadership has to dispense, get rid of the expert. This is a return to the oral tradition. So here people, the professors talk about the oral tradition as some glorious precursor to literacy, and all it was people bullshitting. That's the oral tradition. They sit around like we are today, bullshitting here. So we have returned to the oral tradition. Now, McLuhan then says, commando training, okay, revolutionaries, terrorists, commando training requires awareness of the overall situation. So the terrorists came here, they took the 911 terrorists, supposedly, if you believe they did it, they came and they took airplane flights and disturbed the airplane flight teachers because they would want special kinds of topics to learn, like what was one of them? Something about what went on in the cockpit. It's not something a normal flight student would ask. So there were these odd requests by, one of the terrorists didn't want to learn how to land. Wanted to know how to take off and what to do while you're flying, but didn't care about landing because they were going to crash the plane, so that didn't matter. That makes Carolyn laugh. So that's a good example. So they were surveying the United States environment and trying to decide what to hit, and they were looking at the overall situation. So they were engaged in commando training. So here's McLuhan, who told me after 911 that it was very easy to anticipate or predict the 911. He never told me how one could do that or how he did it, but he did say in 1976 on July 4th, an American Bicentennial Day, I heard it over the World Trade Center radio TV station, and they said, what do you see for the next 100 years for Americans? And he says, one word, apocalypse. So I heard that, McLuhan's archive is on top of where the apocalypse would take place. Commando training requires awareness of the overall situation since he, the commando, like the guerrilla, often has to make decisions without consultation that affect everybody. Under electric environments, we affect everybody. This is, or you could say, we affect nobody. This is training for leadership and initiative, which is beyond the range of the specialist. So you got to be comprehensivist. You got to know the whole situation because you, in a decentralized situation, may be in charge quickly. So you got to know how to handle that. In an information environment, as hardware is etherealized, that means doing more and more with less and less, leadership training or survival training calls for inclusive awareness and survival initiative. A navigator, now isn't this interesting? McLuhan is predicting for the 80s that all you citizens who are reading this article are going to have to get into survival mode. And, of course, nuclear war almost happened in 1982, a very tense time that Dr. Beter is the journalist of, early 80s, that was predicted by McLuhan. A navigator doesn't have a specialist goal. You got to learn how to navigate. So a navigator doesn't have a specialist goal. He has to keep the total situation in mind. In the 80s, this includes the roles of artist and satirist as a distant early warning system. So if you become a commando and a leader, you're going to have to be a satirist. That would be what they call in the 80s irony. Irony took over a lot of media sensibility in the 80s. They used to criticize the Church of the Subgenius for just riding on the fad or trend of irony. And a lot of that would be in the Saturday Night Live kind of humor, probably, or just in politicians and how they interacted on Sunday morning talk shows. In the 80s, this includes the roles of artists and satirists as a distant early warning system, the artist being the dew line, distant early warning, the military surveillance, technology that waited for Russian planes, Soviet planes to bring over the bombs. It was called the Dew Line, which was put in by America on Canadian soil up in the Arctic. So McLuhan saw himself as a distant early warning system. A Dew Line, which is also Dave Worcester's initials, David Eugene Worcester. It took that as quite significant. The arts give an infallible reading of the psychic and cultural climate. Phineas Wake was infallible in predicting our situation today in our five bodies. The arts given in foul, that's serious art, you know, important art, though McLuhan does say lowbrow culture is miming highbrow culture in certain broad styles. So we're maybe not sure. You got Finnegan's Wake and then you got the Beatles. That's what McLuhan wrote about in the mid-60s. The arts give an infallible reading of the psychic and cultural, note the word psychic, reading of the psychic and cultural climate. In the 80s, so the arts traditionally have given an infallible reading of the psychic and cultural climate, and you can read McLuhan's book Through the Vanishing Point. Every art school should teach it, but of course they don't. Through the Vanishing Point, subtitled Space in Poetry and Painting, a beautiful book. I recommend you check it out, Madeline, there in the library of San Francisco. And that book is the general history of art fulfilling the psychic and the cultural role. But then McLuhan says, in the 80s, the arts will also return to the oral tradition. So that would be rapping. Holy shit. I hadn't thought and noticed that before. He predicted rap. What do you think of that, Jermaine? I got to post that on the McLuhan list. That's going to be incredible. The arts will return to the oral tradition. What the hell? You know, you had singing, you had rock, you had sort of an audio tactile, I say the 60s is tactility, is the hidden ground of Zappa and everybody. I'll say it this way. So the painting was big in the 20s, so you had the eye as a rearview mirror. Then you had the ear in the 60s, all that great music that I touch on every show and start off the show with. And then after that, you get in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, you have tactility in the rearview mirror as the main characteristic of the arts for the Android meme. Now, he's predicting the oral tradition, so I would call it the audio tactile because the rap is damn oral beyond rock because it's just ranting, raving, and incomprehensible rhymes and fast talk to keep up with the MTV and mixed media, but overlaid by the word makes the market. So you see my point, Carol? You had the oral tradition in rock and roll and rock and all that stuff, but it was electrified and tactile. But the blacks brought it back to speaking. And speaking is a tactile medium when you really understand all the senses involved in. So McLuhan called it the return to the oral tradition, which had, for art professors, began with the Vorticists and Pound and Eliot and many other artists in the 20s. But to say it now, and McLuhan's well aware of appearing to be redundant, we'll have to say he predicted rap. The arts will turn... Now, what do you think of that, Jermaine? This article predicted your youth. Where is everybody?
Yeah, and I would have never known until now.
You never would have known that. So you've got to look at this thing. Read this... this manifesto carefully.
Yeah, so with a rapper,
is a rapper. Yeah, I mean, fucking Jermaine fucked rappers. That was what you had to do, right? In high school, like, you were forced to. It was the Harvey Weinstein era, right, Jermaine? You guys were all raped and pillaged. Tough times, right? Right, Jermaine?
Sure.
Sure, whatever you say, Bob. The odd-out tactile proprioceptive tradition. A lot of physical contact, shall we say. Mosh pit stuff. But yes, Carol's pointing out that you, as a young teenager, were groupified, turned into a groupie over the latest art. The kids respond to the latest, and you responded to rap, right? Was he a rap singer in your day with him?
Was what?
Was Luca Infallible a rap singer when you were with him?
Yeah, he's a rapper.
And back then?
Yeah, back then, yeah.
Okay. So here's what Jermaine recognized. She recognized that the artist will be appreciated as the missing link in man's evolutionary equipment. Look at that sentence.
Wait, say that again?
So,
say that again?
Okay, the preliminary sentence before it is, the arts give an infallible reading of the psychic and cultural climate. In the 80s, the arts also will return to the oral tradition. Now, that is symbolized by the kid that Warhol picked up on. He died. Who's that guy? The painter made rough cartoon kind of...
Basquiat.
Yeah, Basquiat. That's right. Now, I saw the movie with him. I assume he was into rap. I don't know if it showed us that. But he was, you know, this highfalutin art gallery world that Warhol upset a little bit. But he picks up these kid off the street. Then he becomes a big deal in the high culture world. And he's the oral tradition, if we think of orality, as audile tactile. He's a cartoonist. That's what McClune's predicting here. The artist will be recognized as the missing link in man's evolutionary equipment. In other words, as technologies take over the evolution of biology, replace biological evolution, and these technologies set up weird new effects on us, weird new anomalies, the artist will be the person on top of what the effects are that are coming to you. Just like the internet is here, and that was anticipated well ahead of us in Finnegan's Wake. So the artist will be recognized. So this is what McLuhan recognized. Now he's predicting in the 80s that McLuhan knowledge will be generally acknowledged. The artist will be recognized as the missing link in man's evolutionary equipment. The Painted Word by Tom Wolfe, which came out in 1975 or so, Tom Wolfe, the critic who made McLuhan famous in journalism by writing the big article in November 1965 called What If He's Right? What If He's As Important As, Newton, Darwin, Pavlov, Einstein, Freud? What if he's as important as that? Well, Tom Wolfe went on to use McLuhan to make other interesting books. And he did the famous one on the Merry Pranksters with Ken Kesey called the Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. Good sort of history of the latter 60s. But he went on and did a history of art and how painting was really guided by the manifesto, by the word. The word, every avant-garde artist had to have a theory about why he was making ridiculous art, not your regular representative art, why he made art where you couldn't even see if the painting was finished. For example, he would make art, Jackson Pollock would, by dripping paint on the canvas. Now, imagine that. Imagine doing that in Leonardo da Vinci's fucking workshop. You would have been, you wouldn't like what would have been done to you. You wouldn't want to hear about it. Yeah, you had to have perspective and simulation abilities to make things look like what they apparently look like if you were an eye-based culture extended by the Gutenberg galaxy. You like that, Carol? That was a good little rant there. So the Painted Word, which McLuhan knows is about McLuhan stuff, the Painted Word by Tom Wolfe is a witty spoof on American art and critics. So Wolfe is a Manipian, like McLuhan, and a good friend of McLuhan. The Manipians flock together. So McLuhan translates Tom Wolfe's Painted Word theme. He says, instead of representing the external world, that's representation in postmodern university talk, painters have come back to confronting their own dialogue as the subject of art. So confronting your own dialogue, Carolyn, is like what your theory is, what's your big picture, what is reality, what I'm always demanding people to express here, what is your own dialogue, and that becomes a subject of art. That's a very interesting interpretation of the Painted Word, which simply is just, you got a bunch of painting, where's your manifesto? But McLuhan says, no, that's an inner dialogue, and it's the real subject of the art, not the... lack of representation. So, amazing statement there. Then he says, okay, retrieval time. This was the condition of the cave painter, who painted not reindeer and buffaloes, but the magical and evocative word for these creatures. There's the Painted Word. He wanted to evoke magically through a paint, a painting, a drawing that was not seen, was not meant to be seen. It was meant to be acoustically, proprioceptively evocative. Wow, this is great stuff for young minds like yourself, Madeline.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is, let's hear a little applause from the audience here, what you're witnessing. No one would tell you this, what I'm telling you. It just wouldn't get anywhere.
Long.
That's right. Was that Brent? Thank you, Brent. All right.
No,
or
that
Yuri. Was that Yuri?
That was my watcher, Yuri.
Who was it? Is it Yuri?
Yuri is my watcher. Apparently, Yuri and I are the same people to Sarah. So.
All right. Well, who yelled out?
That was me,
Trey.
Bob.
It was that Trey. Trey is the one.
No,
it was Yuri.
It was Yuri.
No. Oh, it was Trey.
No, it was Yuri.
Trey.
No.
It was who?
Yuri.
They can't decide who it is. They don't know who it was. This is so modern.
That's Yuri.
This is so hip, Jermaine. Look at that. Look, my audience doesn't know who they are. Like, they're arguing over who did it. this is a monster.
I'm going to tell you who we are, Bob.
That's right. The tactile tradition. Bob's audience. I'll try again, Carolyn. No, maybe Carolyn should ask. They're all afraid of Carolyn. Ask who did it, Carolyn.
Who made that sound that made Bob stop in his tracks and spend 5 minutes trying to figure it out? Speak up now.
It was me, Carolyn. It was Yuri.
Okay, Yuri. Now we have OJ here. Is that what he's called? Yeah, I think he's OJ. We're going to get to OJ's issues in a minute, okay, OJ? We just finished up this break.
Actually, Bob, I only have like a few minutes tonight, but I can call him and talk longer next time.
Well, okay, give your point, whatever you want to say right now, the brief version.
Well, I don't have anything to say.
Oh, well, why are you here?
I don't know. I thought something would evolve out of me being here. I don't know. There's nothing I can say.
Yeah, you do a lot of studying. You need to study this manifesto, Living at the Speed of Light in the 80s by McLuhan. I'll send it to you. Really, if you haven't read it, it's really good. Okay? Living at the Speed of Light in the 80s. McLuhan's prediction for the 80s in 1979.
Wait, he wrote it?
Yes.
I haven't heard of it.
Yes, he wrote. I know. That's why. And I've been discussing it for months here. So we're coming up to the conclusion. So listen to this. Don't make any noises. We're into the artist will be recognized as the missing link in man's evolutionary equipment. The painted word by Tom Wolfe, 1975, is a witty spoof on American art and critics, because the art establishment, McLuhan thought, was a joke, because the real art was the larger media environments once Sputnik went around the planet, not painting or New York City or this stupid world that Germain caught on to and ran away from, oral tradition. That ain't the art world. Bob's the art world, the awareness of what art is. Instead of representing the external, now he's going back to, say, the last 100 years. Okay, well, I got to mute. Why you got that noise? Where's that noise coming from? That was Brent. Remember to mute Brent.
That wasn't me. I'm not even driving anymore.
Okay, good. Well, whoever's making that noise, mute yourself. Okay, so what is going on in art, actually, in the 70s? Well, for most of the 20th century, the painters, instead of representing the external world, painters have come back to confronting their own dialogue as a subject of art. Now, you can confront your inner voice because it's kind of univocal. It's just talking. It's your neighbor talking to yourself. And you're inside an extension of ESP, a multi-sensory, multimedia environment, where the univocal dialogue of your voice, inner or outer, is kind of puny. So it becomes an object of scrutiny. It's the rearview mirror. So, McLuhan continues, this actual condition of studying your own dialogue was the condition of the cave painter. the Altamira Caves, I would say, who painted not reindeer and buffaloes, but the magical and evocative word for these creatures. So they paint the word. And what is that? I mean, there's something visible in the caves, but they weren't meant to be seen. Maybe that's what McLuhan means by word. They were magical evocations, not to be seen. Then McLuhan says the artist as specialist, that's the Gutenberg artist, the world that Germain had to confront of fashion art. The artist as specialist fades from view, says McLuhan. See, this is where the rappers took over, the Basquiats. In the sciences, as field theory opens up, that's starting with quantum theory in the 20s. In the sciences, as field theory opens up, and that will lead to Jack Sarfati, specialism will also diminish as serious activity and be translated instead into a prestigious narcissistic hangover. If you're a specialist, you're an energy vampire. Look at that. A prestigious narcissistic hangover and substitute for private identity. See, this is the kind of stuff that I could have brought up in our dialogue with Christiane Northrup. The environmental effects of the energy vampire syndrome. Because to be a specialist is to be an artist, and in the Gutenberg sense, and you're propped up by the Wall Street, Goldman Sachs money commodity circus, because they got to prop up private ingenuity for the old Gutenberg individual and for the property owner. So you become a prestigious narcissist. Look at that. Incredible sentence. In the sciences, as field theory opens up, specialism will also diminish as serious activity. So look at Stephen Hawking. He became a narcissist. And this specialism or science will be translated into prestigious narcissistic hangover and substitute for private identity. In the virtual post-no-private-identity-possible world, you will have a retrieval of fake private identity, which is what you witnessed from Harvey Weinstein to your regular caller here, right? Same spectrum, narcissistic hangovers, looking for private identity. And this is why Ion is such a manipian for those assumptions. And so someone like Germain and Roxy, you know, extreme narcissists just because of their background and the environment they came up with. I mean, the first thing Ion told Germain was, you make men feel inferior. You won't have anything to do with them. So this is what had to be worked up, worked around, massaged over the last few years by Bob and company, with a little help from Carolyn's products. And Madeline's stuck in that situation. But Madeline is not your narcissist prestigious. She's your underground narcissist, your underground low esteem kind of person until she met us. Now she has full esteem ahead, Carolyn. You know, full steam ahead? Well, full esteem ahead.
Well, let me bring up Lamberti. She's...
Yes.
Often talking about their narcissist narcosis in relation to McLuhan. So he's talking about it right there, how everybody is stunned by their own image and can't see what's around them.
Now, that's a very good point. So McLuhan means you're not your traditional meaning for a narcissist.
No.
This is what Christiane has, the traditional meaning. But everybody is narcissistically numb by the technologies around them. So the mechanical Gutenberg narcissism is the one that gets hoiked up on Wall Street as the celebrity. Right. And it's a good point. It does mean that you include the energy vampire kind of thing in there, but it also includes the numbing of your own brainwashing technologies that you're using. All right. So there's the background for the artist and its obsolescence. And then we come into what? Currently, McLuhan says, we are in the process of computerizing all phases of education. That's the learning environment becoming virtual. The effect is to render the old Western forms of education and classwork into a new fiscal art form. So you have the old liberal education. It helps terrorists because they got to be comprehensive. But it also props up Wall Street. Education becomes geared to the bottom line, a new fiscal art form. A bureaucracy cannot deal with education in any serious sense. That is, bureaucratic computerized education. It can't deal with education in the serious way to be educated by placing learning on a cost-benefit basis. So a bureaucracy cannot deal with education in a serious sense, so they got to go trivial and allow people to make money and think education is geared to making money. And that took over in the late 70s. That is, bureaucratic computerized education by placing learning in quotes, on a cost-benefit basis, makes the education system on all levels a subdivision of manpower bureaucracy and systems development. That's Obama's government handout for people to go to university. Remember that? Part of Obamacare for the mind. So McLuhan is against the educational system all through the 20th century, but it's getting really bad for him when it's becoming, you know, fiscalized. So this ridiculous cost-benefit basis of education makes the education system at all levels a subdivision of manpower bureaucracy and systems development and part of an overall quantified energy program. See, there's your energy vampire, Carol. Quantified energy. Bureaucracy feels especially at home with – see, McLuhan's giving the ground for the symptoms that Christiane's looking at, the figures. Bureaucracy feels especially at home with systems analysis, and McLuhan talks about Bertalanffy and some of the original thinkers of systems analysis. That was the preferred way of visualizing the effects that they couldn't totally visualize and therefore failed. General Systems was the name of it in the 50s and 60s, and McLuhan satirized these guys. He had a better systems analysis. His wasn't based on concept, but percept. So bureaucracy feels especially at home with systems analysis and quantified, not quality, quantified forms of grading performance. Okay, so the ridiculous, extreme life and stressful world of college people, they got to put up with their, however they mark their, the computers mark their work.
And Bobby, that's exactly what's happening in medicine.
That's right.
It happened in,
back then, in the 80s.
Yeah, in the education of medicine, our testing to become a doctor was multiple choice.
Yeah.
So
no learning going on there.
Yeah, I did real well because I just answered intuitively. Oh, that looks good.
Yeah, you're good at that.
So,
but see, this is the computer, which is actually mixed corporate media, is the environment, is the technology of the day. It changes society, is what he's pointing out. It doesn't just change Wall Street medicine, it changed sports, changed everything.
Right. And then it changed the practice of medicine.
Yes, and they released the insane from psychiatric because they're just going to put them on drugs. No more Freudian or Jungian or whatever other therapies, behaviorism they had. It was irrelevant. If they couldn't afford to be a patient, put them on the street. So it's pretty, it's showing humans are pretty obsolete. The chemical body is in a world that regards the chemical body as dead. And just sort of let it float away on its own, right?
Yeah.
So this shocked everybody of any empathic sensibility or bent, but left everybody overworked and trying to make up with the inhumane level, post-human level of tetrad management in the 80s. So McLuhan's predicting this. By the end... the only specifiable goal in learning is a job. Since goals are obsolete and people are looking for roles, so they market education as goal-oriented towards a job. So that was happening already in the 70s, but McLuhan is saying it ain't going to change. It's going to get worse in the 80s. So he says by the end of the 80s, so he says in 10 years, our education system will be fully clothed in the garment of computers. And that's what Jermaine and you guys grew up with, eh? Computerized education. I assume there were computers in your school, right, Jermaine?
Yes. We had computer class.
Right. Yeah. The garment of – you were born in the early 80s?
Yes.
Yeah, so by the time you're 8, 9, and 10, you got computers in your school?
Yes, we did.
There it is. So people – I remember friends of Carolyn teachers and that saying, you'll never get me behind a computer. Remember, that's what Shirley said in 1982. You know, that's we didn't get a computer till 94, but Walter Bowert had a word processor in 82, 83, and I wasn't too attracted to it, but that was the beginning of the computer takeover. Mr. Jobs, look at the name. He's going to make everybody have a fucking job, a useless job, which is actually just a role with no point of view. Just typing. By the end of the 80s, our education system will be fully clothed in the garment of computers. In such a system, there's no place for humane learning or ideals. The drive is toward robotism. That is, toward producing the functionary, the well-adjusted man. And that's what the punks satirized in the late 70s and early 80s. They put on being a robot. Subsequently, humane studies may become available only on the pattern of the medieval wandering scholar, another form of guerrilla. So the humane studies will go to the violent terrorists. How's that for flip points here, people? That's why you don't say people are empaths or light workers and energy vampires. You don't make these dialectics unless you're a journalist. You don't say that there's a battle between the left and the right, the blue and the red, the Republicans and the anti-Trumpers. All these dialectics are easy Android meme univocalness, univocalies, because what's really happening is requires much multi-level talking, a new kind of synthesis based on the five-bodied model. So I suppose you are all stunned at how eloquent I'm being here. Well, it's all part of ascension. So subsequently, humane studies may become available only on the pattern of the medieval wandering scholar. I remember a 1970 CBC TV interview that we caught at 242 Windmill Road, Carolyn, with Steve, whatever his last name was, in his apartment. There was McLuhan on TV, and he, and the young university student interviewing him says, well, what are we? He says, you guys are wandering scholars, gypsy scholars, he said. That's the medieval wandering scholar. So terrorists, all forms of education today are guerrilla-oriented, whether you're going to an art school in Rhode Island or going to a terrorist camp in Afghanistan or listening to me or anything you do is wandering and floating. So McLuhan then says, a new dimension of the educational experience now takes the form of a brief 1 or 2 day conferences is made possible by jet travel. That's what my book, Fatic Communion, takes the archetype of the panel, which is what's featured all these 1 and 2 day conferences. And Carol started going to these conferences. I didn't, because I had no recognizable role in society working for Invisible Intelligence Matters. Therefore, I was not going to any of these conferences. But being in New York and then Toronto, I was able to attend a lot of the conferences that came to Toronto, being a major capital. So a new dimension of Bob's educational experience, says McLuhan, now takes the form of brief 1 or 2 day conferences as made possible by jet travel. Of course, McLuhan fails to predict in the 90s that these 1 or 2 day conferences become authors speaking at Baldwin Books or Barnes & Noble bookstores, where I show up at every conference and intervene politically. So McLuhan says, at these conferences, major discussions and briefings occur daily on an international basis in every part of the civilized world. That's the governed by committee. That is the learning of a living for bureaucracy, learning a living. Direct personal contact has already become a new form of tutorial education in business and political life alike. So that would be homeschooling, personal contact in education that had already been taking place in these panels, in conferences, in business, and politics. It is only during the past 20 years that jet travel, that's from 1960, that jet travel has made it practical for key figures to move to any part of the world for brief personal encounters and group powwows. Group powwows, like Indians. So they access to the Bucky Fullers and Marsh McLuhans and Warhol. What did Andy Warhol do? He would send a double to these powwows. At least one, and we met him, or I met him one time at a club, Carol, met the guy, talked to him about it. He still had blonde hair like Warhol. Now, that would be in the 2005 or so. Warhol had been dead for 20 years. McLuhan then says, a lengthy absence or illness endangers the executive's job as much as a promotion. Look, he's saying, a promotion is a danger, too. Because the more you go up the Naked Apes rope, your ass is shown and you become incompetent. That's the Peter principle. So you lose touch with what's happening in the business on the ground. So a lengthy absence or illness endangers the executive's job as much as a promotion, both of which will put him out of touch. That's what I just predicted. Jet conferences have become a source of a new kind of prestige, as well as a new kind of instant book. So instant book in quotes, a new kind of getting a point of view. Go to a conference, pick up a few of them. So your smooching power is increased. The participants each contribute a paper relating to a central unifying theme, and these are collected, sometimes even edited, and have bred a new literary style for the book, a kind of bureaucratic journalism, an enlargement of the, quote, bureaucratic phrase generator. You know, the bureaucracies come up with ridiculous words, polysyllables. Well, these books are big bureaucratic collections, or are collections of bureaucratic talk. And I have bought a lot of those, Carolyn. Usually they're on literary topics, but I get these books that are come out of conferences. So the what, Carol?
You're in one of those books.
I'm in the one for the McLuhan Conference at Lincoln Center in March 1998. It's called The Legacy of McLuhan Symposium. A good book. Has 27 papers. There were 45, and 27 submitted them for the book. And you learn a lot from that. Especially my essay is in there, way ahead of everybody's, way on a whole other level. The editor, Lance Strait, had to fight the other editors to let it in. They weren't going to let my talk in. Of course, I end by talking about McLuhan and the Evergreen, so that's not too academic back then. Now it is. So we've got 7 minutes, so we're coming up to the last paragraph. So McLuhan says, now I'm not reading this part, but in Understanding Media, the only other chapter that has the subtitle Extensions of Man, remember the title of the book, Understanding Media, subtitled The Extensions of Man, are games. Games are extensions of man. So talking about games in media is a game for the conferences which McLuhan attended. All the holy offices, LaRouche, McLuhan, Croker, Thompson, who am I forgetting? Thompson, McLuhan, LaRouche, and Croker, they all went to many conferences. William Irwin Thompson made a living out of it. For decades, he went to conferences, and I think he said he attended about 1,000 of them. So the instant book, in a way, is the papers being delivered at the two-day conference, but he actually means the book that comes out of the actual collection of the papers. Have you ever been in one of these books other than that one that put in our body percept paper, Carol? Have you ever been in the collection? I don't think so.
No.
Only that one. Okay. Right. So, but they do have conferences as part of a tax write-off, right?
Yeah.
And all doctors go to them, learn about the latest drugs to program you. So we're coming. So we've done art. Now, Andy Warhol, no, McLuhan said that sports was war under wraps, and his associate Warhol said that sports athletes replaced the artist as celebrity vehicle or icon in the 70s and 80s. So McLuhan predicts the role of sports, and he says cubism in sports. So he's putting together art and athletics. He says our new forms of sports will include the audience in the action. Just think in the 80s of the hooligans, those wacky British gangs that would go and start fights in the stadium. That became a major theme, shocking Prince Charles and the Queen. And, of course, happens all over Europe. So that's the audience getting in the action. McLuhan predicted it. Our new forms of sports will include the audience in the action. It used to be that, now quoting Finnegan's Wake, pastimes are past times. Pastimes are pastimes. For example, the Queen goes on, little jaunts on her horses, and they go deer hunting or fox hunting. That actually was necessary when you actually had to make a living agriculturally or wandering tribes. You had to get food. It was not a pastime. It was a mode of technology. But then it becomes obsolete by the mechanization of food, so hunting becomes a pastime. or a game or sport. Sports and games were a civilized nostalgia replay of an earlier mode of culture as ritualized art form. For example, boxing, in brackets, after the Queensberry rules, or fox hunting and swimming. So sports and games were a civilized nostalgia replay of an earlier mode of culture or technology, and it's done as a ritualized art form. For example, boxing, fox hunting, and swimming. There was a clear distinction between sports and games and the real world outside. The umpire or referee was a highly trained, paid representative spectator, you know, like paid to be Gutenbergian. In the 80s, as private identity dissolves further, that's the Gutenberg reality, and with it detachment dissolves, the detachment of the umpire or referee, the narcissistic involvement of everybody and everybody else's image increases. See, there's the narcissism. It's technological. The narcissistic involvement of everybody and everybody else's, the narcissistic involvement of everybody, do it again, the narcissistic involvement of everybody in everybody else's image increases. And spectatorship will end. Now, we have the Android meme replayed all this for Web 2.0. Nothing representational will remain to sport. Now, what's that mean? That really means what kind of weird involvement has happened to painting with cubism. It lost its representational visual aspect, visual space as defined by books and the phonetic alphabet. So nothing representational will remain to sport as happened to painting with cubism, as spectators, in quotes, players, and home audience, the ones watching TV, merge. So this, of course, might sound romantic, this merging, but it also means violence. When you do these kind of shifts, the people's identities get altered. So what McLuhan doesn't predict, but my book, Fatted Communion, does, is the digital replay of the audience getting the act by the forums like Madeline's Facebook page where everybody jumped in on her topic of QAnon and all. Everybody piled in, Carol, digitally with their fake visual private identities and private opinions and turned it into a mosh pit. So I don't know where that leaves sports. They just left kneeling and rebelling against the national anthem, I guess. So here we are in the 80s as private identity dissolves further and with it detachment, and Ion retrieves private identity in a whole new comprehensive way. The narcissistic involvement of everybody and everybody else's image increases and spectatorship will end. Nothing representational will remain to sport as happened to painting with cubism. Remember, you get Pollock walking around on the canvas. That's very multi-centrally involved, and that's what the hooligans did. They got multi-centrally involved in the game. As spectators, players, and the home audience merge. Now, the last four lines. Living at the speed of light, so a summation statement here, living at the speed of light, all past and all futures, there's Ionic talk, all past and all futures are simultaneously now. There is no past time for pastimes to replay or ritualize. That's the end of games, Carolyn. No pastimes. Like I say, no retrievals. There is no pastime for pastimes to replay or ritualize. No outside or inside our own time or world. That means no perspective, therefore no art, no game, no sport. Everything becomes an attempt to be that. And he says ending games, sports, and entertainment alike will all become a form of fantasy life of now and me. Now in quotes and me in quotes. What I told those people, Rob of Tottenham back in 2008, at that cafe in London, there is no now. Now is in quotes, and me is in quotes. Isn't that awesome? And that prepares the world for Ion. Perfect timing, people. Oh, what an artist. What an athlete I am. What a mosh pitter. Thanks, Bob. Worth it.